couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Long Weekend, Come True, Stay Out of the Attic, and the sci-fi original series Resident Alien. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, I've got an interview with Crisis director Nicholas Jarecki, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Victor and Valentino, folk art foes. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is an ongoing story. It's been going on for years now, actually. Ray Fisher, who played Cyborg in the Justice League movie, weirdly timed, of course, leading up to the Justice League, the Snyder Cut release. And Ray Fisher has taken some grievances against the people who worked on Justice League, not just director Joss Whedon, but to some of the executives who were in charge. I talked a little bit about this a couple weeks ago, where Charisma Carpenter came out and spoke out against Joss Whedon and how that caused a bunch of ripples and everything. Well, Ray Fisher has been, I don't know how much detail he's given behind the scenes, but at least in a public forum, there hasn't been much. It's all been very vague. My problem with his complaints have always seemed to be, I was not treated like the other people who were all bona fide movie stars in their own right. I mean, you're talking about Ben Affleck, Henry Cavill, Jason Momoa, and Gal Gadot. Those are four people who are brought to the table a huge amount of stardom. Nobody knows who Ray Fisher is, and now people only know him because he's the guy complaining about the Justice League. Well, he posted this thing on Twitter where he's saying, oh, there are these racist comments, and he talks about some meeting. He quotes, he actually uses quotes, which I don't know how you can quote somebody if you've not been there to hear them. And they made some comment that he said, well, we can't have the character be an angry black man. And then they went and stripped out all the black people from the movie and complains that they were giving him direction to walk like Quasimodo. And they were trying to make jokes or take a, you know, sort of a comedic shot visually at his, let's just say, his package underneath his waist. Look, these don't seem appropriate to me, but they hardly scream of massive institutionalized racism. The question of can we have an angry black man as the main character, that's been posited by everyone from Spike Lee on down. There is that stereotype you want to avoid. So, you know, is that really racist, or was that them being weirdly sensitive in a very awkward, insensitive way? I don't know. I wasn't in the meeting, and neither was Ray Fisher, and I'm getting frustrated with such little detail coming. I mean, there's more detail about the royal family and racism there than there is any sort of real hard and fast detail about whether he was treated badly because he's a black guy, or whether he was treated badly because, or maybe just not as well as the other actors in the film, all of whom had a much more impressive resume. So I still see nothing that has come out that has really made me say, this guy has a major case. It goes all back to the same things I was talking about with Charisma Carpenter, where I'm like, Hollywood is smarmy, and there's a lot of people who do not have a great time making movies because it's not easy to do. I mean, it is a grindhouse in there. And the people don't realize, they think it's all, you know, oh, isn't it fun? And all these sweet little fun, little cute stories about pranks and getting along and goofing off that you hear in a junket. And that's not the way making a movie is. It's hard work and it's exhausting and tempers run high. And you got a bunch of real a-holes who run the business. And that's just the way it is. And if you can't stand that, don't be an actor. The next piece I just want to kind of swerve by really quick is the Pepe Le Pew scene in Space Jam 2 has been deleted or isn't going to be finished. They shot the live action version, but they're not going to animate it, and they cut it from the film. And it's all this question of, did they do it because they're overly woke, and is Pepe Le Pew an archaic character, and have they canceled Pepe Le Pew? you know, I'm on the other side of the fence on this one than with the Ray Fisher thing, where I say, first of all, it's Warner Brothers making its decision, or the director making his decision on this, because it was, they changed directors for Space Jam 2. And you know what? I have to admit, the accusations that Pepe Le Pew is inappropriate are not unfounded. I mean, the entire one-note joke of every single Pepe Le Pew cartoon is he won't take no for the answer. He's very handsy. Your whole thing is, in the middle of it, you're like this poor cat. And I know a lot of people say, oh, it's just a cartoon. Well, that's fine. But you're, you know, it's, is it appropriate to show kids as the behavior of the protagonist, in quotes, of the episode? Because people have always said since the Three Stooges were making stuff, oh, you're going to get kids poking each other in the eye or hitting each other over the head with hammers. And you have entire generations saying, I grew up my entire life knowing that it hurts to poke somebody in the eye. I grew up my entire life knowing not to hit somebody on the head with a hammer. But I have to say, we have entire generations of men who think the behavior of Pepe Le Pew, why cartoony, is okay. There's a lot of guys who won't take no for an answer. If you don't believe me, look at some of the news stories that have been coming out. There is a certain argument to say, Pepe Le Pew, his behavior, while funny at times, is not good. And I mean, this is not even like all the other Looney Tunes characters, a lot of them have just one note gags, and that's what Pepe Le Pew is. And they can be funny. I guess my question is it appropriate unfiltered content for kids? And here's the thing. Again, it's not a government agency telling Warner Brothers to take this out. It's not even a letter writing campaign that did it. It was a director who was revising his movie and a studio that decided, hey, maybe this isn't appropriate content for kids. That's not canceling Pepe Le Pew. Warner Brothers can do whatever they want to with their own characters. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is called The Unholy, which is in theaters on April 2nd, which is Easter weekend.
A girl performing miracles after a visitation from the Virgin Mary.
All right, I think I got this all set up. What do you say we do a couple real easy questions?
How many are going to watch? Mary wants to reach as many people as possible.
Maybe millions.
You think there could be other forces at play here?
When God builds a church, the devil builds a chapel next door.
Don't doubt her.
I like a good religious-centered horror movie. And I always find it hilarious that Hollywood itself nowadays, secular Hollywood, is very secular. Until they do a movie about an exorcism and then everybody finds Jesus. But this still looks like it might be a neat little horror movie. I like these sort of exorcism-type movies or these possession movies. You know, I'm excited to see it. It's got some good people behind it. You know, Sam Raimi, the Ghost House production. So I'm looking forward to that one in a couple weeks. There's also Thunder Force with Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Spencer, which comes out on Netflix on April 9th.
I've been developing a genetic platform that will allow us to give ordinary people superpowers.
What's your superpower?
Invisibility.
That's awesome.
Let's see what these powers can really do.
Thunder Force, remember it.
For the first time in history, we're seeing real-life superheroes fighting crime.
I play dirty.
But we're also seeing a new kind of criminal.
This city deserves what's coming to it. Boom.
This one looks like it's going to be fun. I'm a little concerned because I think Ben Falcone is directing it. That's Melissa McCarthy's husband. And I, in general, have not been a big fan of his movies. I like Melissa McCarthy, just not in his stuff. I also like Octavia Spencer. I think they're both very funny and they have great potential. But it could also fall flat if it's going to turn into something like Tammy. But I think they're trying to make them more likable characters than some of the characters that he's done in the past with her that have been just this absurdic, mean-spirited, and just unpleasant type of characters. But still, I am looking forward to that one. That comes out in about a month on Netflix. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Long Weekend and Stay Out of the Attic. guys at the movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about one of them that's in theaters exclusively, and that is Long Weekend. After suffering through a divorce and an emotional breakdown, a man meets a woman for the weekend with whom he finds an almost supernatural connection.
I met a girl.
You met a girl?
Mom, go by.
Forever tonight.
I came to town to, I don't know, escape?
I had some emotional problems, and now I'm broke. My life is in total shambles. Tell me how you
know. Are you real?
You don't know everything about me.
Something's going on with this girl.
There's a reason I was drawn to you.
This is, at its heart, a light romance. I wouldn't call it a romantic comedy, even though it has comedic elements to it, because a romantic comedy has certain connotation to them. They're sort of like those breezy, fun little things. They feel like they're bigger budget, something that Reese Witherspoon or Julia Roberts would have been back in the day. This feels much more independent. It's not your typical straightforward romantic comedy. It's got a really great little meet cute in there, but it also has a more dramatic side to it. But it's not heavy. You know, it's not like a Nicholas Sparks movie that's overly weepy and drippy. And it's basically the story of this guy who's kind of lost, and he runs into this woman. She's kind of mysterious because, like, he meets her and she doesn't have any ID, and she's got a purse full of cash because she said something happened to a bank card. She doesn't have a phone. And so there's certain things of her past that she's being very cagey and reluctant to talk about. But they really click and they really hit it off. And it starts out, she's one of those manic pixie dream girls, but it's a little bit more than that. And she's played by Zoe Chow, who is really kind of adorable in this movie. I've not seen much of her. I know she's been around and she's done other performances, and I think she's a writer, but I've never noticed her, you know, in a movie. I know I've seen movies she's been in, but she's always been just kind of like a small part in the background. So she does play this really authentically adorable and sweet character, and it's all about the honeymoon stage because it's just over the weekend. But then there's this fantastic element. I don't want to say what it is because it's a little bit spoilery, but there's a fantastic element to it, or at least allegedly to it, where she claims something and it's either she's nuts or it's true. But either way, they're having a connection. And the guy doesn't want to face the reality that she could be nuts. He also doesn't know if he completely believes what she said. And so it has almost a sci-fi bent to it, but it has a sci-fi bent to it in a very different way. If you remember that movie Safety Not Guaranteed with Aubrey Plaza and Mark Duplass that came out about 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago, where this guy was saying, I have to travel, I've built a time machine, and I'm traveling to the future, and I need somebody to go with me. And that's how he meets Aubrey Plaza. And I mean, that's really was more of a romance than this little thing where this guy had this time machine. Or if you've ever seen the film Happy Accidents with Vincent D'Onofrio, and I think Marissa Tomei was in it, Brad Anderson, who did Session 9, he directed that movie. Even though it has this fantastic element or this possible fantastic element, it's still just the story of two people falling in love. And there are a certain breed of those movies, and they work. They really do. There's another one with Britt Marling, where she plays like a cult leader and she's supposed to have, you know, come out of time or something like that. But they're investigating her as a cult leader and they don't know whether she's real or not. And that's a real neat one because, again, it kind of keeps you guessing as saying, you know, is this real or is this person nuts? So it's a neat film in that respect, but that's not overpowering. It's not about the potential fantastic element. It's about this love story. And true, it's just a weekend. You know, it's pretty easy to fall in love over the weekend and not get annoyed with somebody. You know, it's years of close living that can bore resentment. But that's okay. I mean, it's a sweet little movie. And it's one of those that I was kind of cynical as I'm watching. I'm like, yeah, I've seen these kind of things before. But then I just got drawn in. I got sucked in. And a lot of it, Finn Wittrock does a good job kind of playing the Bella character from Twilight where he's as blank that you can project yourself on. And it's really Zoe Chow's character that has the most oomph behind her. I mean, he's just a troubled guy, but she has a little bit more complexity to her. And that really works. I was sucked in. It reminds me a little bit of that movie that I talked about a couple weeks ago about the map of 1,000 perfect things. It's on Amazon Prime right now. And it's a time loop story, but it's really a love story. And that's kind of how I feel about this one. And it, you know, for that, it worked. I was sucked in and it forced me to like it. And that's kind of one of the best type of movies to see. One you initially don't want to see and then you end up really kind of enjoying it. So I'm going to have to say that Long Weekend totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Stay Out of the Attic. A group of movers are offered extra pay to complete their job overnight as long as they don't snoop in the attic. Spoiler alert, they snoop in the attic.
Good morning. We're here to facilitate your move.
This place is huge, bro.
It is four times your rate. It is imperative that the move happen tonight. The basement and the attic are not your concern.
He's great.
Yo, boss, come here, man.
What'd you find?
Holocaust experiments. Usually, I am much more professional.
This is playing exclusively on Shudder this weekend. Shudder is a thriller network. It has a lot of scary movies and horror films. This is an original movie made for the network, and it is a somewhat low-budget performance, but that's okay. One of the things that's great about horror movies is it lends itself to very small, intimate tales. So I'd say about 90% of this movie takes place in this house, probably even more. I mentioned Session 9 in the last review, and it does kind of remind me of that, where these people are at a deserted location trying to do a job that they're just trying to get done, but there's something in there just sucking them in, and there's something nefarious and notorious almost behind the walls. And it's not exactly a huge surprise when you see what's revealed. But, you know, it does its job. I mean, it makes its mark, and it has some good scares. It has some disturbing imagery. It has some, just disturbing things that happen to people. And you get that with a horror movie. You know, it's a horror movie. It's going to have some blood and gore in it. And I think it's effectively done. Some of the character moments are a little bit rocky. But on the whole, I enjoyed it. It's a nice throwaway movie for a Saturday afternoon if you're just looking for something brand new and you like horror and you want to see something like this. You know, I always have these subgenres that I enjoy. And it's the subgenre of people being trapped in a house. But again, you know going in, you know they're going to go after the attic. Why? Because they're stupid people in a horror movie. And that's how this stuff works. It would have been a 20-minute movie if they didn't go in the attic. I'll pay you four times as much. Okay, deal. Cut the next day. They drive away. The end. That would not make a very good movie. So, yeah, it deals with some cliches and people taking stupid pills. But overall, I enjoyed it. I'm going to say it's worth your time if you like this kind of a horror movie. So I'm going to have to say Stay Out of the Attic kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Resident Alien and Come True. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Sci-Fi's Resident Alien. This airs on the Sci-Fi, well, it used to be called the Sci-Fi Channel, now it's just called Sci-Fi. And what that means is science fiction and wrestling. Because for some reason they have wrestling on this day. I don't know why. But anyways, Sci-Fi has this new series and it stars Alan Tudyk and this came to me as a recommendation from a listener, Andy B, who, thank you, Andy, for giving me this recommendation. And I wanted to jump on this. I'm going a little quicker on this recommendation than others because the show's in the middle of its run. And so I kind of wanted to catch up on it. But in Resident Alien, Alan Tudyk plays an alien masquerading as a medical examiner in a small Colorado town.
You Dr. Harry Van der Spiegel?
What can I help you with?
We had ourselves a murder in town last night. You're a doctor. We need you to come down and take a look at the body.
I have to prove I fit in, that I'm normal like them.
There's something wrong with that man.
Who even are you, Ray Vanderspiegel?
Just a normal human.
My son told me you're an alien.
Well, you don't have anything to worry about. I'm not an alien.
What's funny is before Andy recommended this to me, I saw ads for it online, like on your phone as you're scrolling through Facebook, because the algorithm chews through all of your searches and posts and stuff, and so it figures out what you like. And so it suggested this science fiction TV series, which, first of all, I love Alan Tudyk. I think he is brilliant. He played Pirate Steve in Dodgeball. That's, for some reason, that's the one everybody remembers. He also has done a lot of work with Joss Whedon before he became persona non grata in Hollywood. He was in the Serenity, or the Firefly TV series, and then the Serenity movie. He's also done a lot of voice acting, and, you know, like, he was in Rogue One. He played the droid. Now, obviously, you didn't see him because he was the voice of the droid. But he's done a lot of that stuff. Like, in iRobot, he played the robot. He was the mocap reference for the robot. And he also played the devil in Devil May Care, which is another sci-fi television series I reviewed a couple weeks ago. He's like a Jeffrey Rush, a less famous Jeffrey Rush, or like a Mandy Patinkin, who has done a lot of great roles, but he's not a household name. You mention a bunch of these performances, people are like, oh, I've seen that. I know that. I've seen him. I know who he is. But he's not like Tom Hanks or something like that. But boy, he's got the acting chops to do so. And in this series, it's a, you know, it's kind of a standard launching pad, and the fact of it's this alien that's pretending to be a human. He basically, the alien kills this guy and then takes over his body because the alien's there to wipe out the planet Earth, get all the life off of all the human life off of it. But then, of course, he starts to get to know people, and he starts to develop human feelings, and ends up having a certain level of sympathy for the people who live in town. It's sort of like Northern Exposure, if you remember that series back, oh, was that in the 90s? Was it in the 80s? 80s to 90s, early? Where it's that quirky, in this very small town, wintry area, because it's springtime, but, you know, it's still cold, and there's snow all the place, and they're waiting for the melt to happen. For Alan Tudyk's performance, it's worth seeing alone. He is hilarious in it. He also gives a very heartfelt and very real performance in an absurd situation. And that's the real heart of a true actor. But like, there's a kid in town, like a 10-year-old kid, who can see him as the alien. And so he has this adversarial relationship with the kid. That whole bit is hilarious. He's trying to solve this murder. And when he's dealing with the police, he's very funny. Whenever he's in the scene, whenever he's doing anything, the show's great. And it has some other characters, some side characters that are also very funny. But then there's a couple storylines that are just absolute garbage. And I'm sorry, it is just so jarringly terrible. Like, one of the people that works in his medical office is this nurse, and she's one of the indigenous people there. And she had given up a baby when she was 16, and there's this whole sub-story like that. And that storyline is awful. It is so cliche. In a way, it feels like they had this movie about this alien doing all this stuff in town, and the executives came in and said, I'm sorry, you need to add more stories to these characters, and they binged watch Grey's Anatomy and then put those stories into the TV series. It's clunky in those parts, and and it's amazing. It's like a light switch. My wife and I are watching it, and I'm loving the episode, and then it goes into one of these stories, and Alan Tudyk disappears for 15 minutes, and I'm like, oh, God, this thing's awful. So if you can get through those sub-stories that have nothing to do with the alien, it's a great show. And I just, you know, it's still in the first season, you know, it's like 5 or 6 episodes in. It airs, I think, on Wednesday night on Sci-Fi. But you can also stream it on the NBC app. And if you have cable, you can sign on and just watch it for free. At some point, I'm sure it's going to come to Peacock, but you may have to pay for certain episodes. I don't know. I think Universal's still working out their pricing structure for that. But it's a great little show. I mean, when it's good, it's great. When it's got a clunker storyline, it's not so good. But it's still absolutely worth watching, if for no other reason, for Alan Tudyk showing off his absurd acting ability. So I'm going to have to say Resident Alien totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the film Come True. A troubled runaway teen joins a sleep study to help diagnose her for recurring nightmares.
Have you ever had any difficulty getting to sleep?
Yes.
Have you ever been diagnosed with any sleeping disorders? Sleepwalking, night terrors, insomnia?
I used to sleepwalk as a kid, but I haven't in years.
What are you studying? I can't tell you that.
It's a nightmare.
Are we ready?
Don't you ever feel like you're seeing something that you're not supposed to?
For some reason, we always figure out a way to simply discount them as just dreams.
This is in limited release this week. I believe it's in theaters. But if you recall back when I was talking about Stay Out of the Attic, I said there are certain genres or subgenres of movies that I've always kind of been partial to. I've always loved movies about dreams and doing something creative with them. Not just putting a dream sequence in. I think that's garbage. A dream sequence needs to do something more than just add confusion. So movies like Dreamscape, which it's all about dreams, or Inception, or even the Freddy Krueger movies. I love those in the 80s and 90s. I like adding the level of dream. I think it's interesting to examine the human mind. And Inception obviously did that, and yeah, it went through cliches and stuff. But I love dream movies, and I love movies that take place in some sort of a lab where they're trying to help people and it goes disastrously wrong. So this kind of ticks both those boxes on my golf card. It's a little bit murky at times, and even the cinematography, it almost feels like a dream state when you're watching it, which I appreciate, even if it is a little annoying to watch. It also borrows some really great imagery. If you've seen the movie The Nightmare, which is the follow-up to Room 237, the documentary about The Shining, that was a documentary about sleep paralysis and some of the images that people see that seem to be ubiquitous among humans, no matter what culture or your upbringing is. And so it borrows some of that imagery from that. And I wouldn't say it borrows it from The Nightmare. It uses that sort of imagery. If you've seen The Nightmare, you know the kind of things I'm talking about. And it's very effective and very creepy. And there are some twists and turns that are a little corny or cliche. But overall, it kept my interest. It's an interesting movie. It does fall a bit into the whiny kid role, where the girl is just, I want help, but I don't want to help. And you know, she's very confused and conflicted. And then when you get to the end, I guess it all makes sense. But it does try to sustain it a little more than it really is able to. But still, it's an effective thriller. It's an effective off-putting film that has some really neat ideas and imagery, and it works for a short escape from reality, which is ultimately what dreams are. So I'm going to have to say Come True kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking to Nicholas Jarecki, the director of Crisis, and I'll also be talking about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Victor and Valentino, folk art foes. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are done with the movie reviews, but I wanted to jump into an interview. If you remember a couple weeks ago, I reviewed the film Crisis with Armie Hammer and Evangeline Lilly and Gary Oldman. It was about the opioid crisis, and it's a bit of an adventure sort of cop thriller approach to it. I was able to get in touch with Nicholas Jarecki, who directed the film, and talk a little bit about not just the release of it, but releasing it in a time of COVID. So let's hear that interview.
Kevin, pleasure to be here. I'm a fan.
Well, thank you. Let's talk about why you made the movie. What's the purpose? Because you just hit VOD, didn't you?
Absolutely. We released theatrically a week ago, and we just opened this weekend on VOD.
Is it going well?
Well, I'm happy to report tremendous news. Even in the theaters during COVID, We went out to 216 theaters, mostly Cinemark was our great partner, and we were the number one highest grossing independent film in the box office.
Nice.
The number one film in limited release, which was less than 900 screens, and the number two per screen overall. And then in the second weekend, we held the highest grossing independent film, even though we opened on VOD, where I'm happy to report iTunes, we were the number one drama, number one thriller, number one indie, and the number two film overall, second only to Monster Hunter.
Nice. Very nice. You obviously were not planning to release this during a pandemic. You started the process long beforehand. Did you think about changing your release date or anything due to so many theaters closed right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, this film is a long time in the making. Right around the time of Arbitrage, I had a friend pass away from opioid abuse. Mm. And he was a young guy, you know, 29, and really bright, sort of had everything going for him. And, you know, it was just totally bewildering to us. We said, how did this happen? And so then it was many years before what we know now about the opioid crisis and kind of the complicity of some of the people involved, safeguards being ignored and pushing the pills really out there. So that was always in the back of my mind developing it. But then finally, you know, it reached a point where I thought it was a crisis of its own. And so I said, okay, well, we got to make the movie. So started making the movie about 2 years ago. I mean, it took a while to write, you know, a year to put it together. And then we made the movie. And then we finished it, you know, a good 8-9 months ago, sort of right around the time of the pandemic, and there we were ready to roll it out. But of course, we had to press pause. But, you know, there comes a time when it's like, hey, we got to get the movie out there. We don't want to leave this, you know, it's too important, topic's too important. So then it's, well, how? And so we ended up deciding, okay, well, we're going to do this limited thing where theaters are open, but at the same time, we'll bring it to VOD. And that's a strategy we employed on my last film, Arbitrage. So when we did that film, we found out certain people like to see it in the theater. They're comfortable with the theater, especially in COVID. Then certain people like it at home, and they like the fact that it's out and they can be in the first run conversation. So it's really two sets of audiences, and we just want to serve everybody.
Now, in talking about Arbitrage, you kind of tackled some bigger points along with it just being somewhat of a domestic thriller, because you were looking at the financial crisis and then, and now you're looking at the opioid crisis. Is that something that you particularly like to do, that where you take like a big news making crisis, but attach it to personal stories?
Well, I think so, Kevin. I think you pick up on that well. I mean, I always loved, as a kid when I was growing up, you know, I was watching the films of the 70s. Mm. Dog Day Afternoon by Sidney Lumet, Serpico, Prince of the City, Godfather. They dealt with extreme characters and extreme situations, but they were really reflective of the times.
Yeah.
And I always like these filmmakers who take a look at, you know, what I call like a systemic corruption or an institutional dysfunction. Yeah, you've got Pacino. He's out of control. He's robbing a bank. But what got him to this crisis point? Is it that he's just a crazy person, or is it that he's a product of his environment? So that, I think, is the type of filmmaking that I gravitated towards and so maybe inspires what I'm up to.
Let's talk a bit about the release, because not only were you dealing with COVID, and I bring this, it's not what the movie's about, but because Armie Hammer is the star, you swerved into some controversy with him. You can't help but have that impact, the public perception and the media perception of it. I mean, what were your struggles there?
Well, it's very interesting. The idea of whether or not one can evaluate a film outside the context of what's surrounding its release. I really hadn't had an experience like that before, where there was all this discussion about Hammer's personal life, honestly, about which I know nothing, because he's an actor who's in the movie, and he worked very hard as an actor and prepared for his role. And, you know, a lot of people love him in the film. Some people don't. But I guess that took on some of a dominant theme of the media discussion about it. I don't think it took on such a dominant theme with audiences. Yeah. The film has performed extraordinarily well, to my highest hope. And audiences seem to like it. And I think that's continued. You know, we hit, I think, 80% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. But there was definitely a torrent of some negative energy, you know, against the film. And you know, that's fine. I mean, everybody should say what they want to say. I just want people to see the film on its merits. Yeah. And I know that can be tough sometimes when there's an actor in it who's in a type of controversy. But, you know, I think by and large, that word is getting out. And, you know, we started really having taken a critical beating. And I think now, you know, the tide's turning and the film's getting a bit more appreciated for what it is.
Well, I mean, it's a huge issue. Thanks for coming on the show and talking about the movie, giving a little bit of highlight to it, and definitely about an issue that is a big deal and something that does need to be addressed, and nobody knows how to solve it, but at least this is a start of a conversation.
Well, Kevin, thank you.
Thank you very much, Nicholas, for coming on the show. It was great to have you. If you want to see Crisis, I think it's still playing in theaters, of course, and you can also catch it on video on demand and, you know, support independent film. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on the DVD release of Victor and Valentino, Folk Art Foes. Two brothers in a small town in Mexico have adventures with supernatural forces from their culture.
I'm Val. This is Vic.
This is their grandmother.
Oh, I love those boys.
They live in Monte Macabre, a nice small town with lots of kids to play with.
Did I win?
And where there are portals to other dimensions.
Whoa.
And where ancient spirits come to life.
Are we going to get into an adventure? Or are we just going to get in trouble?
Is that a chupacabra? Whoa! Victor and Valentino!
I'm down.
This is a series on Cartoon Network, and it's one of those series, sort of like Devil May Care, which of course was an adult-oriented cartoon. This is for kids. It has 11-minute episodes. They're pretty short, and I think there's 18 episodes on here, but I think a couple of them, at least one of them, the last one is a two-parter, so it's really 22 minutes. And so it's about 3.5 hours worth of content on this disc, and that's about half of the season. So there's a good amount of stuff for somebody to watch, and it's for kids. It's at its heart, it's a story of these two kids getting into mischief. And that's a very standard trope in TV series, especially cartoons. I mean, that's really what The Adventures of Billy and Mandy are, that Dexter's Laboratory, that's Phineas and Ferb, that's The Fairly Odd Parents. So there's always something where these two kids get in scrapes and adventures. And the sort of the standout element to this is it takes place in Mexico in this small little town. And it's steeped, I mean, just like dripping in Mexican culture because they're from Mexico. But it deals with them playing with supernatural characters from Mexican folklore. And they open up portals. Like one of the episodes, the very first one, has them resurrecting the god of mischief as a coyote. And of course, they're dealing with him as a problematic being. He's sort of like Loki, only he's got fur. So it's fantastical. You know, it has these very high concept ideas and elements to it, which make it kind of fascinating. And if I had watched this when I was a kid, I would have loved it, because it's not one of these things where you have the parent come in and going, nope. This is all just make believe. You know, this was not the Muppet Babies. This is a show where these sort of fantastic things exist. It's also kind of nice to see, you know, it's from a different culture, and there's a huge Mexican-American population. And we all know how strong Mexican-American shows do in certain areas and how strong Spanish language films do in America. While this is in English, I'm sure there's a Spanish version as well, but it certainly hits a certain cultural button, which is great because that can be warm and inviting for people who have that culture. And it can be a learning experience for people who don't. Like, you learn not to release the god of mischief if there's a coyote figurine in your grandmother's closet. So it's cute and it's fun and it's high energy and it's not meant to be taken overly serious. But I'll tell you, it's something I've never seen before. And that on its own gets high praise. So I'm going to have to say that Victor and Valentino totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also released this week on Blu-ray and DVD are Vanguard, Rent-A-Pal, and a whole slate of retro VHS Blu-rays, including The Babe, Gold Diggers, Gorillas in the Mist, The My Girl Movies, and Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Courier, Stage Season 2, Justice League The Snyder Cut, and Invincible. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.